Good morning, University of Manitoba campus, and welcome to UMFM's information and entertainment program, Your Campus Today, for Monday, October 22nd. I'm going to be your host, David Devane. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 11:30 a.m., we bring you all the U of M news that's fit for your ears, plus keep you in the loop on just a few of the great events going on here at the U of M campus that you need to know about. On today's show, despite nationwide legalization, cannabis still banned on the U of M campus. A fine arts student contemplates her time at the U of M as she prepares to graduate, and we speak with Connor Duff, who directs Harold Pinter's Party Time this week at the Black Hole Theater as part of their lunch bag series taking place Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. All this and more coming up next right here on Your Campus Today. While cannabis legalization means Canadians will be able to legally smoke for the first time, students will not be allowed to light up on campus. The Provincial Non-Smokers Health Protection and Vapor Products Act prohibits smoking marijuana on school grounds. Once legal, smoking marijuana will remain illegal in public spaces. The growth and sale of cannabis is also illegal on campus, including in dormitories, in accordance with provincial legislation. An email was sent to all students living on campus reminding them that student resident cannabis policy forbids consuming, preparing, selling, and growing cannabis. The email also warned students if they smelled the marijuana or presented a delayed response in opening their door, it would raise further suspicion and increase the severity of the sanction levied. Students caught breaking these rules in residence will be fined a minimum of $50 for a first-time offense. Non-recreational marijuana use on campus is restricted to those with a prescription and must be in accordance with the U of M's Clean Air Procedure, which enforces non-smoking areas on campus with the intent of maintaining public safety and a clean environment. According to the U of M spokesperson John Danakis, there will be no new policies in place for disciplining recreational cannabis use on school grounds, but that may change in the future. The university will be monitoring the impact of legalization and stay on top of that in terms of making adjustments to the policy. He said, discussions are already underway between UMSU and the university to allow edible cannabis products in private dorms. John Danakis said the university will be focusing on providing support for students who are looking for further education on cannabis use or feel they have developed a dependency. The focus is more so on behaviors that might harm individuals that result from abuse rather than on the action itself, John Danakis explained. And that in dealing with the action itself, it's the same disciplinary processes that are in place now for abuse of substances. He added if security was to catch students smoking cannabis on campus, disciplinary procedure will be decided on a case-by-case basis, ranging from simply asking the students to butt out to more serious disciplinary action. Timothy Appleyard, a computer science student, said that while he would not have a problem with students smoking up on campus, precautions should be taken to ensure people with respiratory issues are considered. I know for me, having asthma, knowing there's designated spots where people could be smoking, I know to avoid those, he said. I'm personally just fine with the use of cannabis, but having that happen in random spots around the university, I just don't like the smell. So a designated spot I know I could avoid would be nice. Fellow computer science student Luke Della Torre agreed with the implementation of possible designated smoking areas on campus in the future. For the most part, the designated spots would be nice, just to make sure, you know, you don't want to influence the kids or anything. Healthy U, a volunteer-based peer-to-peer health education service on campus, will be available to answer questions students may have about cannabis use. Students are invited to visit the service if they are looking for counseling services. Healthy U will also direct students who are concerned about their cannabis use to helpful resources. I'm really sad it's over, says Kaylee Jean Van Werkum with regret in her voice. It's been so great being with the others who've shared my passion with art day in and day out. She adds, what a great community with so many wonderful people. Van Werkum is one of 1,512 students graduating this fall from a program she says has been personally enriching and fulfilling. Art is fundamental to who I am, she explains. I have a need to create. I even get grumpy if I don't have an opportunity to create for a while, she warns. By her own admission, Van Werkum is something of a late bloomer. She spent much of her young adult life traveling the world, living in Nevada, Australia, and even a Buddhist commune. She notes, I'm a firm believer that your 20s are formative years where you learn what you do with your life, making mistakes and trying different things. She eventually was able to afford going to university by saving her tips from working in restaurants. She explained, she was a very good waitress. Van Werkum has experimented in various media during her time at the School of Art. She moved from painting through sculpture and onto installation pieces, but seems to have found her cynosure in self-sustaining art and found objects. One of her pieces that has attracted much attention is a chandelier made from salt and pepper shakers. That took me more than 120 hours to do, she explained. Since then, I have received requests to do similar works on commission, and even from local restaurants, so that means my works can be on public display. Another example of her innovation is a set of ceramic geodes that she designed for one of her art classes. Van Workham explained, "We were asked to make a ceramic vessel, and at that time I was short a class, so I chose geology. I was struck by the beauty of geodes on display, with crystals growing inside large hollow rocks. I realized that these geodes were vessels too, so I experimented with creating my own." Having come to university in a roundabout way, she has some advice for budding artists entering university today. "Slow down," she urges. "Don't rush your art. And accept criticism. Don't be afraid to fail up. Make mistakes, learn from them, and move on." Good advice for anyone, honestly. Van Workham will now be taking her advice directly to other students, as she is aiming to get her master's degree so she can teach art in schools. "It's one way I can use karma to give back to the world," she notes. Coming up next on Your Campus Today, special correspondent Jared McKediak talks to Connor Duff, a fifth-year theater major here at the U of M. Duff makes his directorial debut this week as part of the Black Hole Theater's Lunchbag Play Series, taking the helm of Harold Pinter's Party Time. Performances start tomorrow at noon, also taking place on Wednesday at 12:30 and 7:30, and then closing on Thursday at noon. All daytime performances are free. The Wednesday evening show is Pay What You Can.
UMFM 101.5, you are tuned into Your Campus Today, and I'm joined by Connor Duff. He is a fifth-year theater major here at the University of Manitoba, and he is directing Harold Pinter's Party Time, which is taking place this week as part of the Black Hole Theater's Lunch Bag series. Welcome, Connor. Thank you for coming in.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
So, first off, tell me, what is the Black Hole Theater's Lunch Bag series?
Okay, well, basically the Black Hole's Lunch Bag series, five times a year we put on sort of little shows which are free, mm-hmm. Except in the Wednesday shows, which is like Pay What You Can donations. And they're directed by students, and they're mostly, an educational sort of thing, and and this is like the second one that's going up this year, so second of five, to kind of go along with the larger main stages, and we have three of those, so there's like eight shows per year at the Black Hole.
Okay, and so is this your first sort of kick at the cat in terms of directing your own play?
This is my first attempt at directing a full play. I've directed a couple scenes in the past. I've also tried my hand at guerrilla filmmaking before with mixed results. And I've acted with the Black Hole a couple times. So that's how they know me. And yeah.
So when you say that this is part of, I guess, a five-play series, do the roles sort of rotate amongst the five? So on this one, you're the director. Maybe on the next one, you're helping out, prep the script or,
not like that. No, it's more like how it works is we have like someone submit as a director. Mm-hmm. They pick a script from, say, anyone. Could be like, I don't know, Shakespeare, but, Shakespeare didn't really write half-hour plays, but that's just a random example. And what you do is you just write a cover letter and then you cast the show. So theoretically, anyone can come and you can cast anyone to be in the show.
Okay.
Right. And generally people in backstage, that's one of the classes, they'll help out. So there'll be a stage manager and a lighting designer from there. And yeah, so it's just pretty much a kind of a anyone can do it sort of thing.
Okay, and so this is your first directorial effort, and so why did you choose Pinter's Party Time as the play that you wanted to sort of make your debut?
Well, so I'm a Pinter fan, first off, and not a lot of people know about Pinter, I don't think. I don't know, have you heard of Pinter?
Okay, so now the reason why I know about Harold Pinter is that And I'm not sure if they still do it, but I'm guessing that they still do, is that there is a different sort of playwright festival every year. And UMFM has a theater show here. It airs Wednesday nights. It's called Play It Again. And so every year when this playwright festival is going on in the city, the host, Justin, does pretty extensive coverage of it. And so they did Pinterfest. And I'm trying to remember how long ago that was.
That was a few years ago. I remember it. I didn't actually get to see any of the plays, though, unfortunately. But yeah, I do remember there was Pinterfest a couple years ago.
And that's the reason why I know about Harold Pinter.
Well, cool.
So my knowledge of him is very, very shallow. But from all accounts, he seems like he's a pretty interesting playwright.
Oh, so. Very, 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 yes. So he is a... So for those who don't know, he was born in England in 1930, died like a decade ago, and he... invented a sort of style which we call comedy of menace, which what would happen is in it, it's kind of like dark comedy. Mm-hmm. If it's just like, it's kind of like the dark roast of dark comedy. You just add a bit more darkness to it, right? You don't take your dark comedy with sugar in this case.
Okay.
And there's also sort of there's this kind of unsettling element to it. Mm-hmm. And one of his signatures is pauses. So essentially the idea with Pinter is the pauses speak more than the dialogue. So like characters, they all like kind of yak about, you know, nothing. Well, mm-hmm. not nothing. It just seems like nothing. They're not mm-hmm. really talking about what they want to talk about.
Okay.
So you kind of are supposed to, as an actor, you're supposed to go under the surface, figure out what it is the actors are trying to say, mm-hmm. but that they can't say for whatever reason. And then, you know, they have then we get to that pause, and that's the point where the characters are sort of, that's when they get most revealed, if that makes sense.
Sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, with Party Time, one of the things that I noticed right away was in the script, it said spasmodic party music throughout.
Okay.
So, I thought, wait a minute, this is Pinter. He's the silence guy. Why is he saying music? So I was intrigued right away. I was hooked. Okay. And then I kept reading. I kept just going through the script, and I was like, you know, it's a really interesting play. It's like it's a sort of a experiment for him. And he wrote it pretty late in his career, too. He wrote it in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So he was already like he had written his best plays by this point in time. So to sort of experiment by this point, I think is pretty cool, especially because, like, you know, for me, like I wanted to direct something different, you know, like I always want to do something kind of different, mm-hmm. just with a little bit of experimentation. I figure that makes it exciting, you know. It's if I learn something, the audience is bound to learn something, you know.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So it sounds like he's the sort of playwright where you're having to read kind of between the lines to figure out what's going on and to sort of stay abreast of the action that's going on up on the stage. So that being said, then, because it's not a real linear thing, it's not straightforward, was it hard to direct that sort of play?
Oh, very, yes. There's so many elements in the play, because not only was there music I had to incorporate. Well, that's the thing with that direction, is it's so freeing. Mm-hmm. Like, Pinter is very specific once you figure out the subtext. Okay. You know, there's not much wiggle room when it comes to interpretation once you really figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that direction, spasmodic party music, it's so generic. I'm like, I get this sense that he just wanted the director to have as much freedom as they could. So now that the play is, you know, finished, it's ready to go. I realize, you know, jazz music would have been the thing Pinter wanted. I went with more modern music, something like I basically picked sort of an eclectic soundtrack of rock and roll songs from 1960s up until the 2000s. So we have Rock Lobster. What else? Every Breath You Take, you know, by The Police is in it. We got a Pink Floyd song. There's a couple lesser known songs. We got Take Me Out by Franz Ferdinand in it at one point. What's that one? I Heard It Through the Grapevine, you know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
All that.
I'm glad you picked Rock Lobster because if you've ever seen the B-52s perform Rock Lobster, spasmodic is something that could be used to describe Fred Schneider. he is spasmodic personified. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the play launches this week. Where can people come and see it? And like you said, it is free but suggested donation.
Yeah, the donation's only on the Wednesday evening showing. So, like, the other three shows are unambiguously free.
Okay.
So, yeah, that would be this Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Tuesday, Thursday is at noon. Wednesday is at 12:30. And 7:30 is Pay What You Can.
Okay. And they all take place on the main stage at the Blackwell Theater.
Yeah, that would be the Conklin, which is in the Taché building, just by U Center.
So. Okay. Yeah, it's kind of... I guess it's all changed now, right?
Yeah. It's been that way for, I think since 2016. Is that right? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay. And then it shows four showings this week. And then what happens from there? You kind of put Mr. Pinter to bed and you move on to the next thing?
Yep.
So what are your plans beyond Party Time?
Oh, beyond Party Time. Well, I'm going to finish my degree. Should be my last year. And I got to work on some. I have some backstage work to do on the larger plays here, and I think because the Party Time was, like you said, it was a tough play to direct, especially as a first play. So what I think I'm going to do is next time I direct, I'm gonna probably pick something just a bit smaller at least, because like Party Time has, you know, 10 people in it. And if you can imagine, you know, directing 10 people in a play, I don't know if you've ever directed before.
No, I have never directed, but I can imagine like hurting cats.
It's a bit. But I mean, no, we all had fun, though. We all made something. I think it's going to be fun. You know, people can come out of it being like, oh, that was interesting. It was a nice little experiment. And that's what we made. So.
And I mean... At the end of the day, I think that that's kind of what it's all about, too, right? Is taking some chances and sort of pushing things to a bit of a limit and then taking it about 10 steps beyond that limit and kind of stretching your legs a bit and seeing where you can go. So congratulations, people. Definitely come out and check this out. Part of the Black Hole Theater's Lunch Bag Series, Harold Pinter's Party Time, tomorrow at noon, Wednesday at 12:30 and 7:30, and then Thursday again at noon in the Conklin Theater, which is in Taché, still down in the basement. Kind of? No?
No.
So the old Black Hole.
Black Hole, I know.
I got to get over to that area of campus little more.
I do miss the old Black Hole. The next two lunch bags, though, are going to be in the old Black Hole.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, isn't that cool? There's no way we could have made Party Time in the old Black Hole, though. Like, the space is too small. And my vision was quite ambitious, as people will see.
Well, thank you very much, Connor Duff. And we'll be back right away with more Your Campus Today.
As scientists continue to map out brain development in all life's stages, local researchers lead the way. One of those researchers was featured at the U of M's Edge of Science and Medicine Visiting Speaker Series October the 15th. Hassan Marzban, Associate Professor at the U of M Human Anatomy and Cell Science Department, gave a lecture titled Early cerebellar circuit development, cerebellar nuclei neuron formation, and afferent pioneer axons target neurons at the Bannatyne campus. Marsband started this lecture by discussing how neurons, specialized cells that are activated by sensory information that connect to muscles and organs and that are involved in brain processes, are formed in the central nervous system. In the brain, these neurons form complex functional connections with each other called neural circuits. These circuits are further interconnected with other circuits, forming large-scale brain networks at different regions of the brain. In his lecture, Marsband discussed the structural order of formation of the neural circuits during early development of the embryo and the different genes, neurons, and cellular processes that he and his team have identified in their research. Marsband's research focuses on understanding cellular and molecular mechanisms involved in the development of the cerebellum. The cerebellum is a part of the brain responsible for coordinating volunteer motor functions like walking, balance, and posture, all in a voluntary form. In an interview, Marsband said the cerebellum may be responsible for more brain function than once believed. While the cerebellum accounts for only 10% of the entire brain's volume, it also contains more neurons than the rest of the brain combined. Recently, it has been found that the cerebellum is involved with other non-motor functions such as cognitive function, emotion, language, memory, and thinking, Marsband said. He explained that because of the effects of damage to the cerebellum are most visibly manifested as poor coordination of movement, the cerebellum was thought to only be responsible for motor function for a time. We don't think about the cerebellum when someone has a cognitive problem or neuropsychiatric disorder, said Marsband. Recent research, however, has found cerebellum damage to be common in some developmental disorders. Now we know that in autistic patients, we have, for sure in all of the cases, cerebellum defects, he said. Defects in the normal development of the cerebellum are often found in neurodevelopmental disorders, including autism spectrum disorders, epilepsy, ataxia, lack of voluntary muscle coordination, which can affect speech, posture, walking, and eye movement, and lysencephaly, where neurons fail to move to their final location in the brain. Marsband says he believes the present difficulty in developing therapies and treatments for neurodevelopmental disorders is because of the lack of accurate information about early development of the brain circuit, particularly in cerebellar development. We don't know too much accurate information about the structure of the cerebellum, said Marsband. If we don't know the structure, then we don't know its appropriate function. Marsband and his research team are working on a proposed conceptual model for detecting cerebellar defects. Using this model, he explained neurons may be defective right at the onset of embryonic development of the embryo's neural circuits, and this foundational defect results in all circuitry that forms afterward being defective as well. According to Marsband, understanding normal cerebellar development and how those defective circuits form will potentially inform therapeutic interventions and treatments. We will still need lots of work to understand what the cerebellum actually does, Marsband explained. And he added that while much research is still required to understand the complex workings of the cerebellum, gradual progress has been made by researchers in identifying mechanisms involved in early cerebellar development. Marsband said that this progress is what inspires him as an academic and a researcher. The excitement of my research, he said, is in creating knowledge and science. The Royals Institute of Mental Health Research, affiliated with the University of Ottawa and in partnership with the Mac Gaislin Foundation of Canada, is pleased to announce Dr. Tracy O. Afifi as the 2018 winner of its $100,000 annual Mental Health Research Prize. The prestigious Royal Mac Gaislin Prize for Mental Health Research is given out each year to one of its most promising rising star mental health researchers in Canada to help organize and recognize and fund their innovative and ongoing research endeavors. Dr. Afifi, an associate professor at the University of Manitoba and a research scientist at the Children's Hospital Research Institute of Manitoba, explains that child maltreatment has many devastating consequences across the lifespan, including poor mental health outcomes. However, preventing both child maltreatment and related mental disorders is a difficult task. My research aims to identify protective factors that help to prevent child maltreatment and improve mental health, apply new knowledge to develop interventions, and to test interventions for effectiveness in preventing child maltreatment and improving mental health. mental health. Dr. Afifi plans to use the funding from the prize to help uncover new innovative strategies for child abuse prevention and mental health interventions. If you can save one child from experiencing child abuse, you're changing his or her whole trajectory. You can truly transform their whole life, she adds. Dr. Afifi will receive her award at the Royal Ottawa Mental Health Centre in Ottawa on Wednesday, October 24, 2018, followed by a discussion with the panel of local experts in honor of Ontario Dress Purple Day and Child Abuse Prevention Month. Renowned Globe and Mail columnist and health reporter Andre Picard will moderate this discussion. At the U of M's Honoring Emeritus ceremony held earlier this month, retired food science distinguished professor Dr. Rick Hawley was named Distinguished Professor Emeritus in honor of his many contributions to the field of food safety. Not only did Dr. Hawley dedicate his research and academic career to the study of food microbiology and processing, over the years he responded to hundreds of media and public inquiries about public safety. Dr. Hawley's citation reads, Dr. Richard Hawley's research contributions transformed the understanding of risks related to food processing, storage, and handling. He established a national and international reputation in his field. When Canada experienced a serious outbreak of listeriosis in 2008, Canada's chief veterinary officer noted that Dr. Hawley's expertise, insight, and outreach were critical in creating greater awareness and understanding. For his work in food safety public education, he was awarded the Ralph Kempel Outreach Award. His vision and enthusiasm as an educator, researcher, and mentor drew students and funding. A full professor since 1994 and a distinguished professor since 2010, he led an internationally recognized program of microbial ecology of foods, natural antimicrobials, and zoonotic pathogens, attracting over $4 million in research funds and generating 245 refereed publications and popular articles, as well as a book. Dr. Hawley also served as department head and creator of the flagship Food 1000 course and produced several short courses for health professionals. He is a member of the academic advisory panel of the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and provides media interviews on food safety. He also sits on international food security and food safety committees and served in numerous leadership, editorial, and adjudication capacities, including Killiam Prize panels. Throughout his career, Dr. Hawley received many distinctions, including a University Merit Award, a Science Technology Award for the Canadian Meat Council, and the W.J. Eva Award for Outstanding Research in Food from the Canadian Institute of Food Science and Technology, or CIFST. He is a fellow of the CIFST and International Union of Food Science and Technology. The University of Manitoba is honored to confer upon Dr. Richard Hawley the title of Distinguished Professor Emeritus. And that is going to do it for us here on Your Campus today. We're going to be closing out our show with a track from the new Carly Dow record, Comet. This is Sunlight Remembers. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to be back on October the 24th in 2 days on Wednesday. I've been me. You've been you. My name is David Defane, and this has been Your Campus Today.
Climb here.
Your Campus Today is a collaborative production between UM Today, the Manitoban, the Department of Student Life, and this station, UMFM 101.5. Thanks for listening, folks. If you have a story you'd like us to feature or want to send in feedback, please email us at campustoday@umfm.com.